The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to think and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the earth.
Normal Show Live! Marijuana Nation! Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes. It is Tuesday, May 17th, 2011, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for our show, the next 60 minutes podcast as the Normal Daily Audio Stash, followed by a live talk radio hour just for you listening to us on Stick'Em. Thanks for joining us. And, of course, joining us here over on the boards, working the magic and keeping this thing rolling is our own Ganja John. Ganja John, how are you today?
I'm excellent. How are you, Russ?
Oh, well, I'm doing good. Having some fun with the computer over here, though. That's not my favorite thing. But
no.
We're also joined by Cannabis Carrie in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon. How you doing, Carrie?
Hello, guys.
All right, we've got all sorts of good stuff on today's show. Cannabis Cure UK rejoins us for another episode of the Electric Tuesday Daily Toker Tune. So he's got some music by Exnotic, a song called Weed. Not just weed, it's got three E's in it, so it's weed. And then, at half past the hour, we're going to give you a look at the safety of cannabis and cannabinoids, a great presentation by our own Paul Armentano that he delivered at the Normal National Conference this last month, the relative safety compared to the conventional therapeutics out there. It's amazing information. And at the end of the show, I've got a short radical rant for you on a recent Supreme Court decision that we'll probably be talking about in the news. So, before we get to all of that stuff, let's talk to Cannabis Carrie, because right after the first break, she brings us her hemp headlines. What do we got in the news today?
Well, we've got some breaking news about an Illinois vote that I need to let everybody know about. Also, we're going to cover that Rhode Island gun case that we spoke briefly about an hour or two yesterday. We've got a vote in Maine we need to talk to you about. And also, I think you have a story on some amendment issues. So, full hemp headlines today.
All right. Plenty of stuff to talk about. We'll be getting right to that. Also, want to remind you about the Normal Network. We are on 24/7. You tune in. You're going to hear a great podcast from somewhere around this country of ours. And today is no different. You'll hear Cannabis Cure UK's podcast, Mile High Normal, John Doe Radio, all sorts of good stuff coming up. Stay tuned. There's plenty of it. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
In today's busy world, we're inundated by advertising for all types of pharmaceuticals that come with a laundry list of potential side effects. Shouldn't you have better medical choices? Natural alternatives to pills pushed by Big Pharma? At Alternative Medical Choices, you could choose natural, safe, and effective alternative therapies that are right for your budget without nasty side effects. Cannabis, or marijuana, has been a legal medicine in the Pacific Northwest since 1998. Our doctors will help determine your qualifications for a medical marijuana recommendation in Oregon, no matter where you live. Our massage therapists will ease your aches and stress with soothing hemp seed oil or cannabis-infused massage salves. We also offer acupuncture, Reiki, and other alternative health therapies. Call Alternative Medical Choices in Portland, Oregon at 503-288-5579 or visit our website at www.altmedchoices.com. We specialize in out-of-state recommendations. That's www.altmedchoices.com or call 503-288-5579.
Georgia, Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's NORML News with Cannabis Carry.
In some breaking news today, the Illinois House voted down a proposal to legalize medical marijuana. Opponents raised concern about clashes with federal regulators that have been sending medical marijuana states threatening letters lately. The measure failed on a 53-61 vote, and it needed 60 votes to pass. House Bill HB 30 was proposing a three-year pilot program for medical marijuana in the state for patients under strict guidelines that did not allow home cultivation. State Representative Lou Lang, who sponsored the bill, told legislators that it's not about drugs and it is not even about marijuana, but the bill was all about health care. All the usual arguments were presented to the House members during a floor debate this week: potential for abuse, problems with addictions, gateway drug theories, harm against Illinois youth, and even, yes, a California reference. Representative Jim Sakai waved a clear plastic bag full of leafy material to demonstrate what the legal amount would look like, adding, quote, "Now that's 10 to 13 joints a day. Giving someone this much marijuana and believing it will not create problems is absolutely unacceptable," unquote. Opponents also warned House members that the federal government is cracking down on medical marijuana states, saying Illinois has had enough on their plates and should steer clear with conflicts from the feds. Well, the legislative session ends in a few weeks, and state activists are already promising to introduce a new bill next session.
Hey, Carrie, in that story, do they recall what the limit was they were proposing? Was it 2 ounces, 3 ounces, something like that?
I believe it was 2 ounces on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, 2 ounces. Waving the bag with 2 ounces. Oh, my God, look at all this marijuana. It could make 13 to 15 joints a day. Yeah, if you're rolling pinners, I mean, it could make, you know, 20 to 25 joints a day. If you roll them like we roll here in Portland, two or three, you know?
One.
Who knows? What's the point of mentioning how many joints it would roll? You know, that's like saying, you know, I'm really hungry, so cut that pizza into 12 slices instead of 8. Well, it doesn't make any sense. And furthermore, they're so concerned about the breaking of federal law. Ooh, because these U.S. attorneys have been sending these threatening letters. If the state gets involved with the dispensation of marijuana, then the dispensing of marijuana, then there'll be breaking of federal law and there'll be all sorts of federal consequences. Despite the fact that that's what's going on right now already in New Mexico and other states that have state-sanctioned dispensary programs, and nobody's been prosecuted by the feds for that yet. And despite the fact that medical marijuana itself is federally illegal, you don't seem to have a problem if the patients get busted for growing their own medicine, right? But then you worry about your state bureaucrats getting busted, right? Well, there's a lot of compassion there. And when they make these things, they make this law here for no home growing, right? And because they make no home growing, then they have to make dispensaries. And then if they make dispensaries, they're afraid to enact the law because the feds will come down on us. Well, then just go back and let us have our home growing then. We'll be glad to take the risk of the federal law. We've been taking the risk of the federal law for years now. People that have been using medically in Illinois, they don't care whether it's legal or illegal. They've been growing, they've been using. The question is whether or not they should be put in a jail cell for doing so. And furthermore, the timidity of these legislators. We're talking about a three-year pilot program, which basically means that after 3 years, if they don't vote to keep it, the medical marijuana goes away. It's like a trial run at medical marijuana. We've already got 16 states that are doing this fairly successfully. You'd think Illinois could just, you know, maybe take a look around, look up there at Michigan and see what's going on. Take a look around and see how medical marijuana states, aside from California, you know, there's 15 others that aren't California. Plenty of examples to look at, plenty of well-regulated systems, and 2 ounces is not a whole lot of marijuana. To think that the sky would fall if we let sick people have 2 ounces of marijuana. Shame on you, Illinois House of Representatives.
And in Rhode Island, a recent case has tested the state's medical marijuana law by raising a question about whether people who have the right to use medical marijuana also have the right to own a gun. Dean Drobio's arrest in January of 2010 was for conspiring with his roommate to possess marijuana with an intent to sell it. He was also busted for growing cannabis, but it was the third charge, one for carrying a dangerous weapon while committing a crime of violence, that had the attention of the media and activists on both sides of the issue. According to police, growing marijuana in Rhode Island is a crime that is worthy of a mandatory 3 years in prison for a defendant convicted of a first offense, and it is considered a violent crime. Mr. Drobio had a medical marijuana patient card, and he legally owned a 9mm pistol that he kept in his bedroom. His roommate, Joseph Jobur, was also charged with conspiracy to possess marijuana with an intent to deliver, and he also had a caregiver's card that would allow him to possess and cultivate marijuana. The medical marijuana law in Rhode Island, like other medical marijuana laws, does not mention gun ownership. The judge in the case, Superior Court Judge Robert Krause, after hearing the case, tossed out the charges, saying, "I don't think a defendant ought to be criminally liable for inartful draftsmanship." He rejected the state's argument that Mr. Drobio could be pursued on a gun charge even if the courts found he had the right to possess the marijuana and the charge and the legal right to possess the gun, but not the legal right to grow marijuana while possessing a gun. In the final moments of the court, the judge asked the prosecutor, Special Assistant Attorney General Michael McCarthy, if he found nothing unlawful about what the defendants had done by way of the medical marijuana statute by being within their limits of the law, would he still pursue the prosecution of the gun charge? McCarthy answered, "With all due respect, Your Honor, I would." He went on to explain that the law on the book says that you cannot possess a firearm if you are cultivating marijuana and that the medical marijuana law was silent on the gun ownership. Krause continued to question McCarthy, according to court transcripts, with this exchange. Judge Krause, quote, "So if you meet the requirements, if you have possession of plants that are within the legal limits under this Marijuana Act, and if you have a firearm at home and you're not a convicted felon, both of these are legal, yes?" McCarthy answers, "Yes." Judge Krause says, "But nonetheless, you claim it's criminal conduct." McCarthy answered again, "As is being intoxicated in possession of a firearm." Well, in the end, the judge found that the plants being grown at the house were within the legal limits since there were 2 caregivers listed for growing at that address, although the state is considering appealing the limit charge since 1 caregiver could not identify which plants were hers. That caregiver was Dobrio's mother. It's an interesting case, Russ, and I hope that the ruling will positively affect the 3,400 licensed patients in Rhode Island and the 2,200 licensed caregivers.
Yeah, and we've got a similar case going at the Oregon Supreme Court right now where the sheriffs claim we can't give you your concealed weapons permit or we can't renew it or we have to take it away from you because you're a medical marijuana patient, which means you're a drug addict, and under federal law, you can't give a gun permit, a concealed weapons permit to drug addicts, right? It's the same logic, and you got to take away the word marijuana for a second and imagine that if we were talking about any other drug, even Schedule II prescription drugs that are very highly controlled. If you're talking about any other drug, if this conversation would make sense. First of all, the notion that growing a plant is a crime of violence. that's amazing to me. Growing a plant is a crime of violence. We're stretching the idea of the word violence to ridiculous lengths here if growing a plant is a crime of violence. And imagine if we were talking about whether or not somebody should be allowed to possess a gun if they were a medical Vicodin patient or if they're a medical oxycodone patient. Again, put any other controlled substance, heavy-duty opioid painkiller drug in that sentence, and I don't think it's the same conversation. Nobody would, you know, the NRA would be screaming. The NRA would be all over this if we were talking about taking away people's gun rights based on what prescription drugs they were using. But again, because it's marijuana, because drugs are bad, okay, because drugs are bad, because they're illegal, because they're bad, because drugs are really bad, marijuana is a drug, and it's really bad, and it's illegal, and it's bad, well, then nobody cares. Take away their gun rights, you know, go ahead, don't let them have guns, and the NRA is silent on the issue, right? We're talking...
I'm sorry. No, okay. Stop, Carrie. That was...
I
jumped the gun there. Sorry.
Well, you know, this in over a year, I think that's the first time I've ever done that. That's okay. I was finished anyway. Go ahead, Carrie.
Thank you. Legislators in Maine voted down an effort to legalize and tax cannabis in the state in a divided decision by the Criminal Justice Committee. Last week, the committee voted 8-3 against the passage of LD 1453 that would have allowed the commercial production and distribution of marijuana for adults over 21 years of age. The primary sponsor of the bill, Representative Diane Russell from Portland, compared the federal prohibition of marijuana to the failed constitutional prohibition against alcohol from 1920 to 1933. She said all that did was usher in illegal mafia-controlled trafficking. She said that since lawmakers have no control over the marijuana market, that control is held vastly in the hands of criminals. She said that allowing marijuana to be regulated, taxed, and sold responsibly to law-abiding adults would siphon the life out of the illegal drug trade. Lieutenant Jack Cole, a former narcotics officer with the New Jersey State Police and a former guest here on Normal Show Live, also testified, calling the nation's war on drugs a self-perpetuating and constantly expanding policy disaster. He told the Criminal Justice Committee that there are more important things for them to work on than a bunch of people smoking pot. The bill was opposed by the Maine Department of Public Safety and the Office of Substance Abuse. The threatening letters that were making their rounds from the feds to medical marijuana states were also discussed in the hearing, even though Maine, a medical marijuana state, has not received such a letter. One committee member and sponsor of another measure, LD 1296, that would increase access to medical marijuana in the state, Representative Deborah Sanderson, said that she thinks Maine is not drawing the federal scrutiny for its medical marijuana program, but she fears an effort to legalize marijuana altogether could focus unwanted attention, saying, "I am not in favor of legalization at all, but even if I were, I would not vote for this bill for fear of jeopardizing the medical program." Other committee members that voted against the measure cited fears of drug traffickers and commercial growers coming to the state in droves if they passed the bill. One member voted in favor of it because her adult daughter's experience with uterine cancer found relief from chemotherapy and feels that marijuana should be easier to get for sick people. One sentiment from many was that the issue needed to be pursued through a citizens' referendum, wanting to hear from the people where the country needs to go with drug policy. After the 8-3 committee vote against her proposal, Senator Russell thanked her fellow lawmakers for reviewing it with professionalism and open minds, saying, quote, "When you bring forward a bill like this, some people assume that you're doing it because you just want to go out and smoke a lot of pot. That's obviously not the case. This is not a fringe issue. It's a very mainstream issue." Thank you, Representative Sanderson.
Yeah, that's nice to hear. And this is so maddening when we're trying to get a sensible act passed to just recognize that adults like to smoke pot, and they always have. There's a certain number of them are going to do it. No matter what you make the penalty, they're going to. And we should recognize that and maybe establish some regulations for that market, card people for their, you know, make sure they're adults, make sure they're 21, give people public information that tells them the truth about the substance they're consuming, set guidelines as to where it can be consumed and which places it could be consumed at, and judgment calls on, you know, whether or not someone is sober enough to drive with it. I mean, we've gone through all of this with alcohol. Alcohol used to be illegal, used to be prohibited. We saw gangs rise up from that. We saw it have no change on people's drinking other than to get them to drink much more potent and dangerous alcohol. We saw crime in the streets and gun battles. We've seen it all before. So it becomes so maddening when legislators are trying to do this and we get all the same responses of, oh my God, the drug traffickers would come in and set up shop, or, oh, what would it now, the new one, what would it do to medical marijuana? We just can't seem to get beyond the idea that we understand that the war on drugs is bad and it is not working. But we haven't yet recognized that an alternative would be better. Any alternative would be better at this point. People are still more scared of what legalization would be like than frightened of what they can see right now happening in front of their face because of prohibition. They can, you know, I believe when, you know, people talk about the show and we talk about preaching to the choir, and I think the choir needs to learn a lot of the words to the hymns, but I don't think this is lost on at least some of the general public, at least some of the legislators out there recognize what's going on, what's happening to our civil rights, what's happening to race relations in this country, what's happening where an entire generation of young people have disrespect for the law, disrespect for the police. I think there's intelligent people on both sides of the aisle that can recognize this, but this instilled cultural fear of legalization and this instilled hatred and demonization of cannabis users, this notion that smoking pot makes you fundamentally different, that you'll go wacky, that you'll go psychotic, that you'll be a danger, that somehow growing a plant is a crime of violence, when indeed the violence comes from the prohibiting of the plant in the first place. It's really, really maddening. And I want to thank the legislators in Maine who went forward with this and sponsored this, and all the people in our normal networks who got our alerts and called the legislators and asked them to support this. Understand that this is a marathon, not a sprint. It's going to take many failed attempts at getting legalization before the first one breaks through. But it is going to happen. It is going to happen very soon, and we're going to be here to bring it to you.
I obviously don't need one, but I think it's time for a break.
What are you saying, Ganja John? There you go.
Let's take a break.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Normal Show Live reminds you to never consent to a search. If you're holding and you consent, in most states you will be arrested immediately and you will go to jail. If you don't consent to a search, police may try to intimidate you by threatening to bring in drug-sniffing dogs, or try to fool you by saying things will go easier if you consent. Yeah, easier for them, sure. Stand your ground, refuse the search, and ask the officer if you're free to go. If they still detain you and eventually find your contraband, you'll be no more busted than if you had allowed the search. But by refusing the search, your attorney has a chance to win your acquittal before a judge. If you consent to the search, your attorney's hands are tied. You can find a list of Normal Legal Committee attorneys specializing in marijuana cases by visiting the Find a Lawyer link at normal.org.
As High Times Senior Cultivation Editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From Friend's Closet Grow Room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Electric Tuesday, our segment featuring the best of modern electronic music in the genres of dance, new age, house, and electronica, brought to you by Greg in Surrey, Sussex, England, and Cannabis Cure UK. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Cannabis Cure.
Hey there, this is the Cannabis Cure UK Weekly News Podcast, bringing you Electric Tuesday for Normal Show Live. I'm Greg, and today I've got a track for you called Weed by Exnotic. Exnotic is from Sala in Sweden. This track is pretty chilled out, sort of techno-y, slight borderline on dubstep. I absolutely love it, and I've been using it for a few of my videos. Now that I've started my Cannabis Cure TV channel on YouTube, you can check that out on www.youtube.com/CannabisCureTV and check out all the beautiful weed porn that I have been seeing during my time here in Denver, Colorado. Here's Weed by Exnotic. Enjoy whatever you're toking on. Peace out.
At the Stash blog by surfing to stash.normal.org and choosing media and then Toker Tunes from the main menu.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
Do you really want to legalize marijuana? Prove it. Join Normal today at NORML.org, and your donation will help us spread the growing truth about cannabis. Free speech ain't free, you know.
Free the ganja tree, it's the healing of the nation. Free the Cali weed, good for meditation. Free the pot smokers, they're in a delight. Lighting up the chalice, they keep no malice.
They heal the marijuana.
Come on, say,
free the marijuana.
Hear me, say,
free the marijuana.
Come on, say,
Normal has been the place to go for the latest studies and news on marijuana science, policy, and activism. For over a decade, one man at Normal has written and reviewed more studies and news stories regarding marijuana than most anyone on the planet. First as senior policy analyst and now as deputy director, Normal's Paul Amentano has written for major newspapers, academic journals, and magazines on the subject of cannabis and is frequently requested as an expert witness in the courtroom. His knowledge and experience are an amazing asset to the cannabis community. Available to you now in a segment we call Behind the Headlines with Paul Amentano.
All right, welcome back, folks. 30 after, and before we get to the segment with Paul Amentano, I wanted to remind you we'll be talking about that Supreme Court case, Kentucky v. King, that was decided just yesterday. That'll be the subject of our radical rant at the end of the show. What we'll bring to you now is a discussion from Paul Amentano, a presentation that he did at the Normal National Conference on the relative safety of cannabinoids and cannabis compared to conventional therapeutics. And this is so important as we keep talking about these states that are pursuing medical marijuana laws. And so many of these laws get crafted with the idea of cannabis as the medicine of last resort. Like, if all other therapies won't work, then we'll give you some cannabis. And what Paul illustrates here is that perhaps we should think of cannabis as the medicine of first resort, considering how relatively safe it is compared to many of the drugs that are prescribed now. We turn it over to Normal National Conference. This was last April in Denver, Colorado with Paul Amentano.
Thank you, Marcia. Thank you, everybody, for sticking around for our final plenary session. I wanted to talk to you guys, as these other panelists have, about the concept of safety, particularly when we're talking about the medical use of marijuana, because our opponents use this term all the time. They argue that the reason we can't allow medical marijuana use as a legal option, even for the very seriously ill, even those whose physicians have recommended it, is because it just isn't safe enough. Now, when we have this discussion, here's the thing. We can't talk about safety in a vacuum. We have to talk about marijuana's safety relative to something else. And since we're having this discussion oftentimes about the medical use of marijuana, then it's only rational that we talk about not whether marijuana as a medicine is totally innocuous, but how safe is marijuana as a medicine relative to the standards that society accepts right now for conventional medications. And that's the discussion I think we need to have. And when we have that discussion, we discover that marijuana comes up not just as safe as many conventional therapies, but in fact, we find that it is safer than most conventional therapies. So these are the issues that our opponents often raise. These are the safety-specific criticisms that our opponents raise about cannabis as a medicine. They tell us that medicinal cannabis is just far too dangerous to be recommended as a medicine. They say that medical cannabis poses far too many unwanted side effects. They say that medical cannabis has not yet been subjected to adequate study. And they say there's not enough clinical trials, FDA gold standard, double-blind, placebo-controlled trials, evaluating medical cannabis. They tell us that no medicine is smoked. And ultimately, they say that cannabis just isn't approved by the FDA. So how do we respond to these criticisms? Because they're not going away. And I think as activists and as advocates, frankly, we want to have this discussion. We want our opponents to raise these issues because we have terrific rebuttals to them. So let's look at these one by one. First, let's address this claim that cannabis is just too dangerous. That's what our opponents say. That's what the DEA often says when they hold press conferences. But in fact, when the DEA was forced to make a declaration regarding the relative safety of marijuana as a medicine in a court of law, after hearing weeks of evidence and after deliberating on the subject for more than 2 years, the DEA, of all places, had a very different story They concluded that marijuana in its natural form is one of the safest therapeutically active substances known to man. By any measure of rational analysis, marijuana can be used within a supervised routine of medical care. The DEA went on in this declaration of fact to compare the safety of ingesting marijuana to that of ingesting potatoes. And that, of course, comes from the agency more so than any other organization anywhere in the world that arguably has the strongest bias against any use of marijuana for any purpose. In 1999, we have a declaration from the National Academy of Sciences Institute of Medicine. This is the institute that was appropriated $1.2 million by the Drug Czar's office. This is the same Drug Czar's office that said there was nothing to this issue of marijuana as a medicine. They called it Cheech and Chong medicine. They said there was no scientific evidence pertaining to the medical use of marijuana. Then they gave the Institute of Medicine $1.2 million, and they said take 2.5 years to study the science that we just said didn't exist. And then the Institute of Medicine came back in 1999, and on this particular issue of relative safety, they said, except for the harms associated with smoking, the adverse effects of marijuana are within the range of effects tolerated for other medications. So in other words, they didn't particularly like the idea of patients inhaling potentially carcinogenic smoke. But when we're talking about the therapeutic compounds in marijuana itself, they said it was nothing unique to these properties that made them any relatively more dangerous or risky than conventional therapeutics. We know that cannabinoids don't have a practical LD50 rating. LD50 stands for lethal dose in half. This refers to at what dosage is it estimated that 50% of your subjects will die from taking the drug at that dose. And we attain an LD50 rating by giving larger and larger doses of a drug to animals until 50% of them are dead. Then we extrapolate from that figure what dosage will kill 50% of humans. Based on that number, we come up with a safety profile or safety ratio. This refers to the effective dose or the window between the effective dose, the dose at which 50% of the subjects that take your drug will experience a therapeutic effect, versus at what point will 50% of the subjects that take the drug potentially die from taking your drug. And many prescription drugs, because they have low LD50 ratings, have very narrow safety ratios. It's very difficult to increase the dosage of the drug because you risk killing the patient. But we have an excellent relative safety profile with marijuana because it doesn't have a practical LD50 rating. And we know that cannabinoids don't fit the literal definition of an intoxicant. A toxic substance is something that we introduce to the body that can kill healthy cells and healthy organs. But we know that because the cannabinoids mimic the endocannabinoid compounds, as you heard yesterday and earlier today, how important these compounds are to maintaining good health. Because the cannabinoids in marijuana so closely mimic these compounds, they even interact with the same receptors, we know that they behave not like toxic substances, but instead like supplements. So we need to begin explaining that to people. We're told that cannabis poses too many unwanted side effects. This is a conversation that I really like to get into as well, because virtually all conventional therapeutic substances possess side effects. And typically, these side effects are far more severe than even the worst case scenario anyone can come up with marijuana. Typically, when we're talking about adverse side effects of therapeutic agents, we're talking about potentially toxic or fatal side effects. I just want to read to you a couple headlines of side effects associated with conventional medications. March 3rd, 2011, LA Times. Daily use of aspirin and other non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, commonly known as NSAIDs, are associated with a 22% increase in the risk of erectile dysfunction. January 12th, 2011. The Guardian from the UK. High doses of common painkillers increase stroke risk, warn researchers. Commonly used painkillers increase the risk of heart attacks and strokes when taken at high doses or over the long term, researchers say. They're referring to ibuprofen. February 2nd, 2011. Physicians say good riddance to worst drug in history. They were referring to Darvon, which was approved by the FDA in 1957 and then finally withdrawn from the market. Quote, no single drug has ever caused so many deaths. Quote, I'm surprised it stayed on the market so long. It's addictive. In my experience, not very effective and toxic. Quote, I'd probably add Demerol to the list too. It's toxic and sedating, and in my personal opinion, it should not be used at all. Look, folks, the reality is therapeutic agents have unwanted side effects. The opiates are associated with overdose death, suicide, arrhythmia. Acetaminophen or Tylenol is associated with liver damage and can potentially be fatal. Nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs are associated with kidney failure, ulcers, ED, as I just talked about, heart attack and stroke, as I just talked about. The benzodiazepines, your Xanax, your Valiums, are associated with memory impairment, impaired motor coordination, amnesia. The SSRIs are associated with seizures, heart disease, liver damage, suicidal thoughts, tremor, and on the list goes. What are we talking about when we're talking about adverse side effects with marijuana? The number one reported adverse side effect, as reported in the medical literature, dry mouth. So let's have this conversation. Let's talk about unwanted side effects. But, you know, when our opponents talk about unwanted side effects, they're kind of talking in code, because what they're really referring to is the fact that THC in marijuana is intoxicating. It alters mood. Well, here again, does this somehow put marijuana as a medicine in a unique category? Conventional medications don't alter mood. Xanax doesn't alter mood. Codeine and morphine don't alter mood. If this was the standard, we wouldn't have most of the prescription medications that we have now. And what the hell is wrong with elevating a patient's mood anyway? When did that become a problem where the solution is to throw them in jail? We're told that scientists haven't adequately studied marijuana. Really? Really? Anyone who's been in this conference and listened to the last few lectures, do you really think we don't know enough about marijuana? There was a study published, a meta-analysis in 2008, that said at that time there were over 15,000 published articles in the scientific literature pertaining to cannabis and cannabinoids, another 2,000 pertaining to the endocannabinoids. If you go on PubMed, which is a search engine of scientific journal abstracts, you type in cannabis, cannabinoids, marijuana for 2009, you see there's 2,700 published papers in 2009, another 2,000 in 2010. There are over 850 papers published regarding marijuana this year alone. We have studied this plant almost as much as it can possibly be studied. Does anyone think there's really a question about marijuana that we haven't answered yet to the point where we need to keep it illegal as a medicine? Seriously? So, when we raise this point, and we say, you know, there's over 20,000 published studies in the scientific literature, our opponents say, well, that may be the case, but they're not the right kind of studies. There's a lot of studies out there, but they just haven't followed the right methodology. They haven't used this double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trial model. Well, they're full of shit there, too, because we see that there are dozens and dozens of studies that have used this gold standard model. Lynch and Campbell, just writing in 2011 in a meta-analysis reviewing the clinical data regarding cannabinoids for pain relief. They said that the overall quality of these trials, it was excellent. And it has to be, because as you heard earlier, there are so many barriers to doing this research. You can't do shoddy research if you're going to try and assess medical marijuana. You have to use the highest standards possible. So the studies that are published are very, very good. And in this case, they said 15 of the 18 trials of that conclusion criteria demonstrated a significant analgesic effect of cannabinoids as compared to placebo. Several reported significant improvements in sleep. There were no serious adverse effects. Getting back to that earlier criticism. The University of California in 2010 held a press conference, and they said, we've concluded a series of FDA gold standard clinical trials assessing inhaled marijuana in seriously ill patients. And they said, our conclusions lead us to believe that in some cases this ought to be a first-line medication. They said that in addition to just treating symptoms of disease, there are some cases, like in the case of multiple sclerosis, they said that possibly there can be disease moderation, and most likely, cannabis as a medicine is offering benefits that conventional medications don't offer to patients with this illness. Groten Herman and colleagues in 2010, he went through the literature and he said there's been more than 37 controlled trials published assessing the medical efficacy and safety of inhaled cannabis or cannabinoids. And he said, these, if you totaled up the number of subjects that took part in these studies, we're talking over 2,500 individuals. This is actually a very large number when we're talking about clinical trials. I'm going to talk about this in a later slide. But when most drugs are being brought to market by pharmaceutical companies, they're not going to put thousands of people in their clinical trials. It would be incredibly, incredibly expensive to do so. It would take them years to recruit so many subjects. So we're talking about a very large number relative to other medications. We're talking about a large number of clinical trials and a very large number of subjects. Then our opponents say, well, no medicine is smoked. God forbid we inhale burnt leaf matter as a way to medicate ourselves. That's the sort of thing we did in the Dark Ages. We don't use leeches for bloodletting anymore. We hear that argument all the time. Well, that argument's fairly semantical, because if we change the word smoking, which I know there's a negative stigma attached with these days, and we simply change that to inhalation or inhale, well, the reality is there's plenty of conventional medications that are inhaled. A number of steroids are inhaled, for instance. I didn't know what Qvar was until about a year ago, and I had a upper respiratory infection. I was quite sick. I went to the doctor, and my doctor said, I'm going to recommend you take Qvar. And she gave me an inhaler, and she said, I want you to go home. I want you to inhale this medicine every few hours, as the directions say. And I said, get with the program, doc. Don't you know no medicine is smoked? Give me a pill. What is this idea of inhaling my medication? Federal government says that's a no-no. Why do we inhale certain conventional medications? Well, it's the same reason many medical marijuana patients inhale their medicine, because they want a rapid onset. They need to feel immediate relief and rapid onset, which delivers the active compounds in marijuana to the blood so they can quickly pass the blood-brain barrier. That is the most effective way to get the active compound into our system. Patients can readily regulate their dose because they feel the effects so quickly. They know if they have taken enough or they know if they need to take more. And because there's no risk of fatal overdose, it is very important when doling out oxycodone that a patient takes the recommended amount, because if they take more, they risk potentially killing themselves. So we typically don't leave that discretion up to the patient. But when we're talking about a drug that doesn't have a risk of fatal overdose, then we can give that discretion to the patient. And frankly, we give that discretion to patients right now for other conventional medications. If an asthmatic is having an asthmatic attack, they don't go to their doctor first and ask the doctor how many puffs they should take of their steroid from their inhaler. We entrust that the patient knows best how much they need to take to alleviate their symptoms. And there's no reason we shouldn't do that with cannabis, which is arguably safer. And we also know, and everyone in this room knows, that we don't have to smoke marijuana to inhale marijuana. We can use vaporization. And in fact, vaporization in clinical studies has been shown not only to reduce the potential carcinogens in marijuana smoke, but it's simply a more effective delivery device. Because if we measure the blood concentrations of people that have inhaled cannabis via vaporization versus smoking, we find greater, higher percentages of THC and other cannabinoids in the blood of those subjects that vaporize versus those that smoked. So, of course, we get to the final argument that opponents raise. And we need to have a good rebuttal to this argument, because this argument is never going to go away. They are always going to say, yeah, Paul, that's all well and good, but cannabis just isn't FDA approved. And you know what? It's not gonna be FDA approved. So we need to have this discussion. The role of the FDA in any other health regulatory agency like the FDA is to evaluate patented products that are produced by a private entity. And since we know that Muhammad El-Soli and his lab at the University of Mississippi is the only federally licensed legal private manufacturer of cannabis, and we know that Mr. El-Soli is not going to be taking his safety and efficacy data to the FDA any day soon, that the FDA is simply not going to approve marijuana. The FDA is established to evaluate double-blind placebo-controlled trials, which are very short-term in duration. These trials generally only include a very small number of subjects and a very homogeneous number of subjects. And there's a number of reasons for this, but one of the reasons is also to keep costs down and allow for adequate patient recruitment. FDA trials typically look at single symptoms. And we know when we're talking about marijuana that we're often talking about multiple symptom relief, or sometimes we're talking about disease modification. We know that FDA trials typically exclude subjects with certain pre-existing conditions. And they do that because they want, the manufacturer wants to establish safety in the trial because they want to get their drug approved by the FDA. So why include people that have potential safety concerns? Because they might get sick during your trial and it might make it harder for your drug to get approved. The FDA gold standard sets a standard that marijuana would readily meet. Because we know that people that use marijuana as a medicine don't use it for a short term. Many of them have been using it for decades. We're not talking about a small homogenized group of people, but we're talking about millions of people throughout the world using marijuana as a medicine. We're not talking about a single symptom, but we're talking about a multitude of symptoms. We're not talking about just limiting the use of marijuana to a small group of individuals that don't have any pre-existing conditions. The reason these people are using marijuana is because they have pre-existing conditions. The bottom line is that cannabis has established a safety and efficacy profile in the global laboratory over thousands of years. It has surpassed the standards, or it has surpassed standards that are far higher than those set by the FDA or any federal drug regulatory agency. And that's how we respond to the FDA question. And this is how we need to be talking about marijuana as a medicine and safety. Not about safety in a vacuum, but safety relative to the conventional medications that marijuana could replace. Thank you very much.
The Normal PAC, the political arm of Normal, makes contributions to members of Congress and select state legislators who support our policies and advance legislation towards that end. Elected officials need to see that those of us who support legalization are serious about changing policy, are about more than just getting high, and understand the importance of supporting politicians who support us. Please make a contribution today to the Normal PAC and send it to the Normal Office in Washington, D.C., 1600 K Street Northwest, Suite 501, Washington, D.C., 20006. Or go to the Normal website and make a generous contribution. It is an investment in our future and will help assure we finally re-legalize the responsible use of marijuana in this country. Thank you.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Well, folks, sad day for America. In a case decided yesterday called Kentucky v. King, we've talked to you about it, the United States Supreme Court decided that cops who smell marijuana coming from your home can break down your door and arrest you just as long as they knock first and claim to have heard you destroying evidence. Oh, and they don't need a warrant or any probable cause either. Today in America, police can now randomly patrol neighborhoods and apartment complexes sniffing around for pot. When they smell it, they can knock on your door and then break it down, claiming they heard noises from within. Now, in case anyone missed this part in high school, the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution plainly states the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Now, this was reiterated in the Supreme Court decision in 1980, a case called Peyton versus New York. Justice Stevens wrote, quote, in terms that apply equally to seizures of property and to seizures of persons, the Fourth Amendment has drawn a firm line at the entrance to the house. Absent exigent circumstances, that threshold may not reasonably be crossed without a warrant. But now the smell of a burning flower and the sound of scurrying about are the exigent circumstances needed to reasonably cross that firm line without a warrant. This from the Los Angeles Times. Ruling in Kentucky case Monday, the justices said that officers who smell marijuana and loudly knock on the door may break in if they hear sounds that suggest the residents are scurrying to hide the drugs. Residents who, quote, attempt to destroy evidence have only themselves to blame when police burst in, end quote, said Justice Samuel Alito Jr., writing for the 8-1 majority. In her lone dissent, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg said she feared the ruling gave police an easy way to ignore Fourth Amendment protections against unreasonable searches and seizures. She said the amendment's, quote, core requirement is that officers have probable cause and a search warrant before they break into a house. Ginsburg asked, quote, how secure do our homes remain if police, armed with no warrant, can pound on doors at will and forcibly enter? End quote. The Supreme Court ruled in Kentucky versus King that the officers' conduct was entirely lawful and that they were justified in breaking in to prevent the destruction of evidence. Okay, note to self and advice to others. When you're smoking pot in your house and the cops come a-knocking, be very, very quiet. And I'm only half kidding. Justice Alito wrote in the decision, quote, when a law enforcement officers who are not armed with a warrant knock on a door, they do no more than any private citizen might do. And whether the person who knocks on the door and requests the opportunity to speak is a police officer or a private citizen, the occupant has no obligation to open the door or to speak. He may decline to listen to the questions at all and may go on his way. When the police knock on a door but the occupants choose not to respond or to speak, the investigation will have reached a conspicuously low point, and the occupants will have had the kind of warning that not even the most elaborate security system can provide. So, basically, Justice Alito is reminding you here that if you open the door and talk to the cops, or you respond to them in any way, they can break down your door. If you make noise when the cops knock, police can interpret that as you attempting to hide or destroy evidence. Drugs, which creates that exigent circumstance needed to break down your door. Which just leads me to ask, what does hiding or destroying cannabis sound like? Now, I suppose the obvious sounds of garbage disposals or trash compactors or flushing toilets might be an answer, but in King's case, scurrying was enough. I guess the cops could argue he was running to the window to throw the baggie out. Of course, this all depends on taking the police at their word when they testify that they heard the scurrying. In the King case, the cops weren't even looking for King. They were conducting a sting operation on a street-level crack dealer. When he ran upstairs to his apartment on the right, the police followed, but they lost him. And then they reached the apartment on the right, but they smelled marijuana coming from the apartment on the left. The police knocked loudly on the apartment on the left, and then they heard scurrying. So they broke down the door and they caught King with some marijuana and cocaine. So the smell of burning marijuana, I mean, it does give police indication there's a crime taking place behind that door. The possession of at least a joint or maybe a bowl of marijuana. Now, in Kentucky, the first offense for that kind of crime would be a misdemeanor with a maximum of 1 year and a $500 fine. It would take at least 8 ounces on a first offense for felony charges. So these police, not knowing King or having any probable cause to go after King, essentially beat down his door on the exigent circumstance he may be destroying the evidence of a misdemeanor. Is it reasonable to violate a man's Fourth Amendment rights over a potential misdemeanor? This is how far it's come in the war on drugs, people. The entire excuse they needed to get around the civil rights of Americans is right there in the Controlled Substances Act. We see it day after day in the raids, We see it in the use of the Commerce Clause to go after interstate commerce of medical marijuana patients who are only using marijuana in state and not engaging in any commerce. This is the topsy-turvy, bizarre world our civil liberties have turned into because of the drug war exceptions, and it's got to stop. Be proud of being a legalizer, because this affects our liberty like no other issue in this country.
We love the earth.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
All right, folks, thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for hour two if you're listening live. For those of you on the podcast, thanks for joining us. For Cannabis Carrie, Coleco the intern, and Ganja John, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
Now you'll see, you let it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.